1620. Welcome to another edition of Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. Hope you are having a happy Independence Day. I know it's probably a more quiet one than you may be used to. No local fireworks displays or anything like that. We're continuing to try to practice social distancing and try to keep everybody safe in the age of the coronavirus. But we're going to start things off today with another edition of the Pop Culture Panel. And joining me this week on the Pop Culture Panel, first of all, longtime entertainment journalist and Pensacola photographer Phil Bailey. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola, Phil.
Thank you. Howdy.
And also joining me, the talent buyer for Vinyl Music Hall and one of the best music guys I know and one of the best pop culture guys I know, Chris Wilkes. Welcome, Chris.
Hey, I love my radio voice.
Hey, Chris is actually...
No, I'm not going to keep doing that.
Chris is actually my former co-host of a music radio show on another station that no longer exists. That's not our...
Oh, why?
That's not our fault. We were gone before they didn't exist. It's not our fault. But we're just going to spend about a half an hour. We have a short show this week because of Independence Day. Normally we're an hour, but we're just a half an hour this week. And we'll be talking about kind of everything that's going on in pop culture right now, but we're going to start on a little bit of a somber note, guys. As you both know, the great writer, director, actor, comedian Carl Reiner passed away this week. Not a huge surprise, as he was 98 years old, but somebody who's a showbiz legend, who was very much still active even at 98. He was still writing books. He was still, he very much an active Twitter presence, and somebody that just has made us laugh over the years since long before any of us were born.
it's been a minute, but he was a major character in all three of the Ocean's movies,
right? Somebody that's been entertaining people since long before the three of us were born. We'll start with Phil on this. What are your kind of most treasured Carl Reiner memories?
Well, oddly, for someone who identified so much with comedy, his debt to me, or my debt to him, however you put that, he introduced me to film noir with Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid, the Steve Martin movie where they intercut comedy with film noir clips.
Oh, yeah, he turned Humphrey Bogart into his sidekick. I remember seeing that in the theater as a kid myself, and I think that may have been my introduction to film noir too, and now that I think about it, it's a really like weird kind of experimental film. You don't see a lot of films like that. There have been a few, but not many, and of course, as a director known for a big connection with Steve Martin, starting with The Jerk, and they did I believe four films together with Carl Reiner directing
Man with Two Brains, All of Me. Yeah.
Some of the best comedies of the 80s were Carl Reiner and 70s, because I think The Jerk was, 78?
Yeah, I think so. Somewhere thereabouts.
78, 79, yeah.
Yeah, so some of the best comedies of that era were Carl Reiner directing Steve Martin, and that's certainly a big impact for me. Chris, what are your favorite Carl Reiner memories?
Honestly, I know I've seen all of those, and I've seen several of them probably hundreds of times, especially the Jerk and Man with Two Brains.
Yes. There you go.
Thank you. Sorry about that, radio people. but I think the thing that sticks out to me most is Summer School, that he directed in the mid '80s with Mark Harmon and Kirstie Alley. Mainly because the two characters, Chainsaw and his buddy, that were in the summer school class, pulling this big prank on a substitute teacher with all these crazy practical gore effects. Before that, I had seen horror movies before, of course. But I think that scene in that movie kind of sparked my interest and fascination and love with horror door effect. So that was a big thing. It was a couple years after that one of my main jams on old school Nick at Night was the Dick Van Dyke Show, which he was a writer on, and also
he was the creator of the show. In fact, the creator of the show. In fact, which was initially conceived as a show that was going to star him, and because it was very much based on his experience as a writer on all of Sid Caesar's shows, and then the studio said, "Hey, we love the concept, we love the scripts, we love the direction. We don't love you." And he said, "Okay, well, I'll go out and get Dick Van Dyke and create an iconic sitcom that still lasts to this day." In fact, last night on CBS, they aired two colorized episodes of the show as a tribute to Carl Reiner, who did occasionally appear on screen and eventually became a recurring character as the boss of the show, the Sid Caesar character in a way, Alan Brady. That for me was probably where I first encountered Carl Reiner as a kid. I remember watching the syndicated rerun as a small child in the afternoon.
And it was absolutely my favorite on Nick at Night. And then a couple years later, when I realized that this same guy that had created this show had also made this movie, speaking of summer school and that scene, I'm like, well, that's weird, but that's kind of awesome. And then realized that he had made these other movies that I had seen and didn't realize that he was behind them. And I'm just like, that guy's incredible. And then his more recent acting work, I'm a huge fan of the Ocean's movies, even the one with the ladies, which he was not in, unfortunately. But I've been a big fan since I'm 10, 11 years old, I guess.
Well, I think it's funny because he is somebody that had a long acting career and a long comedy career, but I think people tend to remember him first for his creations, his behind-the-scenes efforts and that sort of thing.
Right.
But, one of the big things that I think people will remember him for as well is, first of all, his decades-long, very close friendship with another great comic, Mel Brooks. Up to his death, it used to be that every night Mel Brooks would go over to Carl Reiner house, watch Jeopardy, and then watch a movie together, and that was like their tradition since the two of them had lost their wives a while back. And
they would do a lot of late night and talk show appearances together, just kind of riffing with each other and being buddies on the couch together.
Well, and of course the famous 2,000-year-old man routines.
Which
they almost made it.
Yeah. I mean, and Mel is still alive, so don't count him out yet. Mel was the 2,000-year-old man, so we can't count him out just yet. And, I mentioned their wives. You may think you don't know Carl Reiner's wife, but if you've seen the movie Harry Met Sally, you actually do know his wife, because she is the one that delivers the famous line from that film, "I'll have what she's having."
I thought that was Billy Crystal's mother.
Rob Reiner's mother, who directed the film.
Yeah, let's don't forget that he spawned Rob Reiner, too.
Yeah, his son, of course, himself a great actor, comedian, director, writer, did films like The Princess Bride and When Harry Met Sally and This Is Spinal Tap. And, of course, was everybody's favorite meathead on All in the Family in the 70s as well. So that in and of itself is something of a legacy. What do you think, Phil, is something that people may not think of that they should check out to remember Carl Reiner?
And it's not my favorite of everything, but it's one that I think the least people have seen, besides maybe Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid, and that's The Man with Two Brains. I mean, I still think that's an unheralded Steve Martin movie, to say nothing of him.
And
that'd be mine.
And Phil, do you have one?
Well, I've already mentioned Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid, which is way underseen, especially nowadays. Summer School already mentions one of those weird movies. No one has ever seen it, except everyone who's seen it loves it. I would say dig around. There's a little bit of stuff out there. Catch some bit of your show of shows.
Which, of course,
there's clips. There's some episodes that still exist. And that's where Carl Reiner, Mel Brooks, Woody Allen, everybody got their start. Neil Simon got their start writing for television.
Yes, absolutely. Well, guys, we have to take a quick break, but we will be back with some more. You're listening to News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Understands I smoke a cigarette alone. Mexican. News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz, and hey, baby, it is the 4th of July. A little X for you there. Got to play that song every year for the 4th of July. We are talking with our pop culture panel this morning. Joining me on the line are Phil Bailey and Chris Wilkes. And guys, I want to shift to talking about something that's very appropriate for this weekend. Disney Plus just dropped Hamilton yesterday onto its service. This is the big film version of the theatrical play. And actually, when I say that, they actually filmed the theatrical play during the original Broadway cast's run. So it's not an adaptation. It's an actual creative shooting of a stage play. Disney, right. Disney paid $75 million for the rights to release this theatrically and then decided, well, given everything that's going on in the world right now, we're just going to throw it directly onto Disney Plus. And, you know, I guess hoping that that would get them a shot in the arm with subscriptions and such. First of all, we'll start with Phil on this. Did you already subscribe to Disney Plus?
Yes.
Okay, so this isn't something that moved the needle for you because you're already a subscriber. How about you, Chris?
Just a quick note, if I disappear, it's because my phone died. I didn't abandon y'all, but I think my juice is loose or something here. I got Disney Plus because I'm a Disney nerd and got it just before The Mandalorian came out. So, yeah, I've had it for a bit.
So for me, this actually is a needle mover because I briefly was using a friend's Disney Plus, although you didn't hear that, folks. So I actually plunked down the money to subscribe to Disney Plus. I'm going to be watching Hamilton later today. I'm very much looking forward to it. Chris, I know you're a musical theater nerd, so I'm assuming you were looking forward to this as well.
I am, mainly because up until now I have not connected with that show, and that's my fault. And I think Lin-Manuel Miranda is supremely talented. I absolutely adored him in Mary Poppins Returns. I think that guy's great. I've only ever listened to individual songs from the show individually. I've never tried to listen to it all at once to kind of get the context better, and I've never seen the show before. It just hasn't resonated with me as individual songs, and I'm super excited to give it this chance and actually see the production, see all of the songs in order, in context, in character, you know, all of that, because I wanted to give it another chance, because I know it's my fault that I haven't gotten to it yet here.
What about you, Phil? Is this something you have some enthusiasm for, or have been looking forward to, or are you just kind of whatever?
No, I'm pretty much in the same boat with Chris. Haven't seen the show, know of it, heard a little bit of it, and so like, oh, that's okay. But since it's going to just be there, I'm going to check it out.
Yeah, see, I think that's the thing about a service like this is a lot of people will check out something that they may not have gone out to the theaters for. So I don't necessarily think this was an unwise decision on Disney's part. I do think it's going to drive some subscriptions. And in fact, our friend Jason Hartman had noted a week or so ago, I think it was Jason, that Disney Plus mysteriously stopped doing free trials. And the thinking is that they were not going to allow people to get a free trial, watch Hamilton, and then dump it if they wanted to watch Hamilton.
That's probably what they should have done before The Mandalorian.
Yeah. They want to watch Hamilton, they're going to pay their $7 for the month, and then they can dump it after that if they want to. So not necessarily a terrible strategy. I would say, guys, being a little more familiar with the show than you, I think that I haven't seen it. I've only listened to the score, but I've listened to it a whole lot. And I think that's what it takes, is actually going through and listening to the whole score. It's not one of those things that's easily accessible in terms of just listening to one song and, you know, catching the pop hit or whatever.
And to be fair, too, I'm the same way with Wicked. And I love the Wicked book, and I know the stage show is very different than them. But I love those books. One, I love A Demon in Zell. I love Kristen Chenoweth. And I've only ever heard songs on their own out of context, and it hadn't, you know, moved me. Where I'm positive if I saw the show, it would be a different story. I've said for years, I mean, at least as long as these niche streaming services have been around, Disney and then like Shudder and, you know, things that are going after a slightly more niche audience, that there should be one of professionally shot and edited stage shows from Broadway and off Broadway.
Well, and lots
so
of those
shows that I would love to see, and I don't want to watch somebody's crappy YouTube video of it.
And lots of those do exist. They do a lot of those things for like the special theatrical events where they'll film it, and then you can go and pay, you know, $20
for
tickets.
Yeah, there's been one for Rent and like Shrek the Musical, and they've done it with West Side Story. But I'd like to see it actually become a thing. Like, I want to see Beetlejuice. I want to see the Addams Family, you know, and I don't want to have to wait for it to come, you know, on tour to the Sanger to get the real context and see how the show really flows.
I think you're still going to be waiting several years before there's a touring production of Hamilton that gets down to the level of the Sanger. There are touring productions of it out there, and there are a couple of off-Broadway, not, when I say off-Broadway, I don't mean off-Broadway in the terms of New York off-Broadway, but I mean like there's a regular production in Chicago and in LA, things like that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, just example, like the first touring version, the first touring troupe of Rent that had Neil Patrick Harris playing Mark, and that was only like 3 years after the show debuted, hit the Sanger in New Orleans, but it didn't come to Pensacola until 2 years ago.
Well, you know, and some of that depends on the show, and it depends on the popularity of the show, that sort of thing. I know there are shows that have touring productions that the Sanger can't accommodate because they don't have the facilities for. I know Phantom of the Opera is one I've heard a lot, because there's the big, for those that know the show, there's the big chandelier thing that's kind of a key thing, and there's just not enough place in the Sanger to be able to do that. I believe Wicked is kind of in the same
boat. I did see the original Phantom, not the original, but the original musical that Weber took a lot of his staging from at the Sanger, and now I don't remember who wrote it, but it was all like opera standards, but with the lyrics changed. But in terms of the staging and how they did a lot of the, you know, on stage effects, and you know, the canoe boat thing, and the mirror and things like that, like Weber took a lot of that. But the actual Weber Phantom, yeah, that'd be tough to do in our Sanger for sure.
Well, and of course, above and beyond the logistics of any theatrical production, the fact of the matter is, as we are living in the age of the coronavirus, we're not going to see any live theater anywhere, probably for the remainder of this year, at least, is my guess.
Especially not live theater that has a splatter zone.
No, definitely not. There will not be a production of Evil Dead the Musical, but I don't think we're going to be seeing any live productions of anything for a while.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate, but it's what it's got to be, man.
Yeah. Well, that leads me back around to film, because we're kind of in the same boat with film right now. The local theaters are all owned by AMC, which had originally announced reopening at the end of June. That's now been pushed to the end of July. The big July releases that everybody was looking forward to, Christopher Nolan's Tenet and Disney's Mulan, have both been moved back into August. We've kind of addressed this topic on every show since we relaunched this show, but it's a primary topic amongst movie nerds, of which all three of us are. So, Phil, tell me, let's say everything goes as planned. Theaters open at the end of July. We get Tenet opening in the middle of August. Are you ready to go take a seat in the theater in the middle of August?
It's weird. I have minimal fear of coronavirus. I might go an August see a film. It's weird that I'm not particularly jonesing to get into the theater, though. I think a lot of that is because since there's no movies, we don't have that just endless drumbeat of the hype machine going 24 hours a day and everything we see.
Yeah, I'll second that.
It's just there. Okay. If it comes out in September, all right. I'll be happy to go, but it's not a problem right now, and I'll be happier to go when things are such that people aren't wearing masks in the theater, which was the plan a week or so ago, because I can't imagine watching particularly any movie that is slightly quiet with everyone breathing in and out through masks just that little bit of ad noise from each person, I think, is going to be a horrible experience.
That might in particular come into play when A Quiet Place 2 was one of the movies that was supposed to come out right before all of this went to pot. So that's one that, you know, if you saw the first one, the lack of sound is so important that every little sound in the theater was magnified. And
you're...
Yeah, somebody.
I've caught things where, you know. Oh. And you can hear the cameraman breathing through their mask, and it's just like, no.
So Chris, how about yourself? Are you particularly eager to get back into theaters? Are you willing to go in mid-August?
I mean, there are movies that I would have preferred that my first viewing of them was in a theater, just for the size and scope. But I'm not particularly jonesing to get back into a theater just to have that communal experience side of it. What I am jonesing for is a whole bunch of movies that I just want to see the movie and that their releases are being pushed back. It's more about the movies themselves than having a big want to get back in the communal experience side of it.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. I've said this once or twice in the past, but you know, it's kind of like the console that has to have the killer game, or the phone that has to have the killer app to get people interested in the hardware of it all. There has to be a film that people are just pent up to see before they're going to get back into theaters. Now, for a lot of people, Tenet might be that film. I'm a big Christopher Nolan fanboy, so it's going to be, you know, when we get to that coming out, it's going to be hard to keep me out of the theater, I think. But you know, for other people, it might be the next Marvel movie, which will be Black Widow, I think sometime in, I think it's in November is on the schedule now. It might be Wonder Woman 1984, which has been pushed back to October. Or it might be, you know, the big art films that we'll see at the end of the year as we start heating up the Oscar competition. Is there a particular film that that either of you are particularly waiting for? And I'll start with Phil on that.
There's an A24 horror movie called Saint Maud that did the festivals end of last year that was supposed to have already been out. That's one I really want to see. I want to see in the theater because it looks terribly uncomfortable, and I like that better in a theater than on the couch.
I definitely agree with that. I'm a big fan of some of the horror stuff A24 has done over the past few years. Hey, Phil, I want to thank you for joining me. Chris, thanks for joining me as well. We will be back next week with much more on Let's Go Pensacola. Until then, you're listening to News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.